House State Affairs Committee will please come to order. Today we have one item on the agenda, and that is House Bill 310, United States Constitutional Convention Delegates. And we'll be continuing to learn more and more and more about the convention process and what goes into it. And I'd like to add that we've been joined by another associate. Please call the roll.
Representative Isaacson?
Here.
Representative Keller?
Here.
Representative Millett? Representative Price-Tompkins?
Here.
Representative Gaddis?
Here.
Representative Hughes?
Here.
Chair Lynn?
Here. Okay, with that, we would invite the sponsor of HB 310 to come forward. Good morning. Please introduce yourself and make your comments to the committee.
Appreciate it. Good morning, sir. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 2, and I hope to make this a lot less painful as last night was for most of us. So HB 310 is, and I'll just briefly, since those might have missed our floor session, the Convention of the States is where we will call a Convention of the States based on three issues. But then the question came to me when I was running the resolution was, well, how are we going to prevent it from being a runaway convention? How do we know what the delegates want to
do? Pull the microphone closer, if you would. Microphone closer.
Oh, sorry.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Representative.
As long as you interrupted the sponsor, I'll jump in here, too. I just want to clarify that we have version uniform in front of us, 310 LS0991 uniform. Thank you.
Okay. Now, that's not a CS, is it?
No.
Okay. So we're on the same page here?
Same page.
Okay. Please continue.
Thank you, sir. And so what that question was, what could we do for the delegates? What you see in front of you is a version of what we could do. And basically what is in front of you says that the state of Alaska, the legislature, will pick the delegates. No matter how many delegates they send, there still is only one vote for every state. This bill says we're not going to pay them for their service. We're going to tell them what to do. If they don't do what we want them to do, we will dismiss them.
Would there be a payment for expenses like a hotel and transportation?
Not in the current bill, sir.
Okay.
And that would be up to the committee if you'd like to do that. We kind of just took the bare bones, and you'll see in front of you as well a copy that shows what other states have done. And so it's kind of across the board as far as compensation goes.
That'd be up to individual states then?
Correct.
Because that didn't go to the heart of the convention.
Correct. And you could make that decision today, or it could be done at the time, at that point, knowing where it's going to be, how long potentially it might be.
Right.
So at this time, though, there is no payment that would make it a zero fiscal note, because we're not trying to add to the budget. I'm just doing what finances told me to do. And so then we're going to send them, and you can get as specific as you would like. The state can. The state could send the delegates with the actual amendment that they want them to go forward, or they could just say, we only want you to cover these two areas and not the third area. It is completely up to the state what they allow the delegates to do. And if the delegates go beyond that scope that the legislature has said, first of all, it voids whatever they have done. They are dismissed, and we can charge them with a Class C felony. Not sure we want to go quite that far, because as you know, with a Class C felony, they would no longer be able to vote even in our regular elections. But I think what it illustrated at the very beginning that this is very serious. You know, we're not going to go and just do whatever we want. It's going to have parameters around it. And how tight those parameters are up to the legislatures themselves as they send the delegates when a convention has been called. And so I will just bring your attention to a handout that I gave you that has the different states. You'll notice on the top of it you don't have South Dakota and West Virginia, and that's because they don't address in their bills anything about residency of federal positions or lobbyists. They only talk about the delegate's oath, the recall of the delegate violated on the violations, and the compensation. So you can see just by the handout that they pretty well every state breaks it up into certain categories, and most of them are very similar on who more that they don't want to be as a delegate versus who can be. So with that, I will take any questions you may have, Mr. Chair.
On the serving without compensation, you know, this convention could go on for a while, right? You know, and it seems to me that could rule out some of the less wealthy people who might be appointed as a delegate. In other words, you might be a fine delegate, but you can't afford to go like this. That's why I'm a little concerned about that. You know, we shouldn't discriminate on who would be the best delegate or delegates to send based on how much money they have to travel and pay for hotel and meals.
And, Mr. Chair, what you might, you know, if somebody wants to amend and just say that can be left up to the time it happens. I mean, this could be down the line. They could have it in Alaska. We don't know where they'll have it. So versus we will definitely compensate them since we don't know what our fiscal will be at that time and how you would set that. But we could leave that up to whatever the legislature is at the time. That they could if they wanted to or not.
Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I appreciate that clarification because it would be necessary, I would think, to have that. So you're suggesting when the legislature is taking up the instructions that at that time perhaps we could have this amended on page 2, line 18, to add that at that time transportation, hotel, and per diem would also be decided at that time.
Through Chair Representative Isaacson, I think instead of that, as I look down at the other states, what we might want to do is just take it out and let that be determined at the time. If we don't address whether they're compensated or not, that would leave that discretion totally up to the legislature when they're doing that.
Follow up,
Representative Isaacson.
Perhaps in section E, then on page 2, on line 15, the reason is, if we say it is our intent at this moment that the delegates and alternate delegates serve without compensation, that may be taken full face value and not. They may not go back to this discussion and say that our intent was to actually have the legislature at that time determine compensation. So I'm thinking we need to change it somewhere. But also, if I could ask, so it's two other questions, if I could, Mr. Chair. On page 3, where it says in section C, basically lines 2 and 3, it says, who casts or attempts to cast a vote of the United States that is not authorized, not authorized by the instructions of the legislature. So is it our intent to at that time allow the legislature to allow any refinements, any clarifications of the language? Because we know that they're not going to be able to exactly cast a vote. But where's your thought in this?
Representative Isaacson, through the chair. In that portion of it, it would be completely up to the legislature how serious they wanted to be. I mean, they literally could say, this is the amendment we want you to go forward with. And it gets basically voted up or down, and if they have enough states that like that language, they would be okay. But you're absolutely correct. If they wanted to start wordsmithing it, they would not necessarily have that authority. Or the legislature could say, we kind of like what the discussion was last night, we don't want to deal with term limits. We only want to deal with federal overreach. So we're going to, you know, allow you to have the discussion with the federal overreach, but you're not going to be able to have discussions in that area. So it could be as specific as that legislature at the time wants to make it.
All right. So we'll kick that can down the road. One more follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
So how many delegates are you thinking that the state or any other states will be sending?
Representative Isaacson, through the chair, some have said only two. Others have not designated how many. Again, I think the times will tell you that, especially if you're going to give full compensation and maybe a per diem, you may send less. Some legislatures are actually sending legislators who already get compensation, and therefore it would just be part of their normal day-to-day. And I would imagine I wouldn't see more than four or five being there, because again, you only get one vote. The more people you kind of mix together, then it's probably going to be hard to even get a consensus on whether or not that particular amendment that's before them even meets their qualifications. So I would say it would be a small number, but again, I didn't want to completely tie the hands of future legislatures, but wanted to make sure that people understood that there could be as tight of a parameter as one would wish.
Okay, thank you.
I would think there should be more than one, so you have some issue come up, you have somebody that you can consult with, you know, on what your position might be.
Correct, Mr. Chair. And also there's usually alternates that are there because, again, if someone goes outside of the scope, you want immediately to have someone there as the other one is on a plane coming back home to be able to take their place and not stop business.
Right. Okay. Please continue.
I'm still open to questions.
Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Wilson, for bringing this forward. The instructions that the legislature would put forward, as you mentioned, could restrict what they would be and would not be allowed to vote on. And there's nothing in this that would keep the legislature from going back and revisiting maybe with another joint resolution if maybe something new came on the table that we hadn't anticipated that our state might think is a good idea. So we could go back and pass a second resolution to give them further instructions once they're at the convention. There wouldn't be, I mean, I read through there. I didn't see anything in here that led me to believe that that would be a problem.
Representative Hughes, through the chair. Yeah, this is talking about any convention of the states that they're that would go, and we, as we talked about last night, if somebody wanted to come up with another idea mm-hmm. that they wanted to speak about, absolutely, this is just how you would choose the delegates for that.
Follow up, because the way I think it would be done is that we would pass the joint resolution with their instructions, and then they would go to the convention, and then I'm saying if something came up at the convention that is something wasn't addressed in our instructions and we wanted to go back and revisit that, there's nothing that would stop us from going back and passing another resolution to give them further instructions. Is that correct?
Representative Hughes, through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, Representative Keller, and then I wonder if perhaps you could do a very quick sectional analysis of this.
Okay.
Representative Keller.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask the sponsor if I made sure I understood that if we, after Representative Isaacson's question, I'm thinking I would like to completely delete that section, subsection E on line 15, page 2, and I just want to see, you know, I want you to state, if you would, yet, you know, if you think that's acceptable, so that the compensation question would be unstated rather than denied.
Representative Carroll, through the chair, I absolutely agree that that should be deleted versus say one way or the other what it needs to be. Again, we don't know what funding would look like at the time it would be called. And so to go either by not stating it one way or the other, I think it will have to be brought up because the first question will be if we send someone other than someone who's compensated in another form, you can't really expect somebody not to be able to foot the whole bill. Since, like we already said, the call could be for a specific amount of days. I mean, again, that could happen, or it could be until an agreement came or did not come. So that would be very hard to be able to tell at this point. But to take it out would generate the conversation, I do believe.
Representative Isaacson?
So, Mr. Chair, on that, and I know that we have moved this for discussion, so I'll just ask the sponsor, Tammy, whether or not language such as this might work. So instead of section E, instead of deleting it all, I like the words that you got in on page 3, and just use that again on page 2, line 15, where we say compensation for delegates and alternate delegates shall be determined by joint resolution under 1551-30A, which basically says before the date established for convening a United States Constitutional Convention, the legislature shall by joint resolution provide instructions, et cetera. And so at that time, just lump it into that joint resolution. Is that following the intent, it sounds like?
Representative Chair, I think either idea would work.
Okay.
It would be up to whatever the committee sees fit.
And can you go with section one and just
Absolutely.
Very quickly go through it and make sure we don't miss anything?
Okay. Mr. Chair, so we're going to be on page one. And the first section is just basically the qualifications of the delegates, a qualified voter, a resident of the state for at least 3 years, has been a resident of the district from which they are selected for at least 1 year preceding the appointment, and are not members of the United States House of Representatives or the Senate. So it's just talking about the delegates themselves. B is about the joint resolution. It's called by the two-thirds of the state set before you could even have a convention. C, it talks about how a delegate can be recalled, how an alternate delegate is put together. D is talking about the procedures of the convention. And then you get down into on page 2, line 16, we get into the duties of the delegates. They will take an oath of office. They'll be sworn in, and that's where you get to where if they don't abide by the rules, that you can charge them with a felony is because they take an oath of office. And if they go against that oath, they are removed, and then it would be up to, you know, the legislature at that point, most likely in the resolution, what they wanted to do if they don't do that. C talks about delegate appointed who casts a vote that is outside of the realm and what would happen in that portion of it. I am fine with that. We actually took this off of Indiana, who had it as a felony. For them just to be removed and sent home, I'm also fine with that. I wanted to leave the felony part in there for you to see, just to understand that you could make it as tight as you wanted to. To take somebody who's volunteering, even if you're paying their way there, they're still going to miss work or miss their family, be away from home. Probably, in my opinion, doing a felony might be a little bit harsh for what they're doing, but at the same time, you know, this is a very serious convention. I mean, we're talking about the United States Constitution, and so the only thing that does by leaving it in there is to let the delegates know that they are representing the state of Alaska and the people of Alaska, not necessarily their own thoughts, and able to go and do anything that they would like to do. And that's really why I put it in here, is to send that message and make sure it was a strong message.
Now, the various parts of this bill, did that come from your office and your thoughts primarily, or is this kind of a template that the other states have used and we just modified it for Alaska? Where did most of this language come from?
Mr. Chair, most of it came from the state of Indiana, who at that time had put one, and if you'll again look at the sheet, you can see that every state had divided into pretty much residency, the length of residency, you know, how you're going to take the oath, and you'll even see that it's pretty close to even the terminology that's used in each one of those areas. So it's making sure that we're talking about each of those broken down segments.
Okay, please continue.
Well, that gets you to the end, and hopefully we don't get to D, which if you do not follow what the legislature has said, you would be guilty of a Class C felony. A Class C felony basically is if you are not in A or B, everything else falls into C, which I was pretty amazed myself. So, but like I said, with that, you know, anything you see on the other sheet, if it's a preference of the committee to go in that direction, but the biggest thing, we did pick the more stringent items, and the reason we did is because when I was before you, I got those questions on the resolution when I was in finance and talking to the finance members. And then again last night, the concern of having individuals determine why they were there versus what they were representing and what the legislature had sent them and the purpose is a very serious portion of that. And so with that in mind, you know, I did take some of the most stringent parts of it so that we started there, and if the committee was more comfortable about having some of that, you know, not so serious, I was fine with that, but I also want to remind the committee that there hasn't been one of these called before. And I think one of the reasons is because change sometimes is very hard. But I think we are in another aspect now where federal overreach, especially, has come into our everyday lives. And not just us. I mean, we're used to hearing it because we look at the laws, we get things from the Attorney General, we get a lot of emails, others don't. But I get it from my constituents on a regular basis, and it's something different with each one of them. So it's not just one issue. And not just for Alaska, who is huge in resource development, has a lot of land owned by the federal government, but you're getting it from states where it comes to power plants, to how the land's utilized, water usage, you name it, and it seems like there's another rule that's being passed that everybody is trying to figure out how they come in compliance with it. And so I think you're going to see a different motivation that hasn't been there before. And again, our founding fathers would not have put this in place if they didn't want us to utilize it. But at the same time, to be very careful in how we did this so that everybody's going with the same intent and with very close parameters around it.
Representative Isaacson.
I do have a question. Just to clarify what you were saying, Madam Sponsor. So this is actually, I mean, the 40th or 41st time that Convention of States has been called. First time was in 1789 by the Commonwealth of Virginia. They were the first one who really called it a Convention of States, but it had been with precedent prior to the Constitution. They had had conventions of states. And then I guess there's been about 39 others, but it's never resulted in an actual convention, I think is what you're saying. But what would be instructive is to find out how did they in that time deal with those who did not vote? Because I'm thinking if we call it a felony, and we've been working on this felony issue where we have an overcrowding of prisons and so forth, what we're doing is we would be causing this person to go to jail, probably. We're stripping them of their right to vote for at least 10 years. We're removing them from a lot of ability to have jobs, all because there might be an honest disagreement. And so if you could provide us, or if we could get information on how those previous calls dealt with this issue. I think that those who are calling for felonies are being a little bit extreme. It's basically they're trying to say it's next to treason, I guess. And while it's a very severe and important issue, I'm not sure that it needs to be as severe as the consequence of calling it a felony.
Representative Isaacson, through the chair, I have no problems with it, just that they're recalled. I wanted to bring forward to the committee just so that you understood that you could just remove them or you could go as high as a felony. To remove that part and just have them recalled, I am absolutely fine with that. But again, I wanted to make sure that you knew that was in the scope of what you could do. And I do agree. I do believe that it could be a little bit harsh. But again, at the same time, there has not been a convention of the states that have been since the Article 5 portion has been put in that's actually been called. There's been resolutions that have been passed on different issues asking for that, that's been sitting in different legislatures, but actually having 34 states come and having, there has not been one.
Right.
And so for individuals to understand that this, because we have other kinds of conventions. We have party, Republican, Democrat conventions. We have, all social for resources, others that don't have the same outcomes as this could. And so just to start out with being removed, in my opinion, was not enough to show them that the importance is at a very high level here. And like I said, I have no problem with it being removed, but I also wanted to make sure that you realize that this is much different than any other convention that many people have experienced.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Representative Gannis, excuse me, Representative Hughes.
No, she's the chair.
Okay, go ahead. Representative Gannis.
Now I'm off my game here.
The lens are never off.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. Through the chair, I this is kind of a trick question. I don't mean it that way, but it gives me food for thought as we do electoral votes for president here in this state. We certainly hold our electorates to some measure. I have never been one, but I do know that there is a measure that they vote on behalf of, that they stand up. And so I don't know, what if they went haywire and voted a different way than they were supposed to, and have never really thought about it. And so I'm not trying to put the bill sponsor on the spot, but if she knows, it'd be interesting.
Through the chair, Representative Gaddis, she has no idea.
Sorry. But, you know, again, I think food for the same thought that we're talking about. If you are tasked with a certain duty and you go off the reservation, if you will, then I think there should be some severe consequences. When you said you were going to do this job and you were going to do it as per the request, what you're supposed to do, you're really representing all Alaskans, and in this case, all it's the Constitution. So I personally think that there should be huge ramifications should you decide to just go and be your own free will person. You are representing the rest of us, so I think it is very important.
I think it's a very good question. Like, you know, we quote elect President A, get the electorate, and then they go vote on yeah, candidate B. I'd like to know what the consequences are. That could be a good guideline for this. Could we talk here about, you know, electing the president is a constitutional procedure, right? This would be the same thing. Okay. Any others? At the moment, Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do also believe that it should be a pretty severe consequence, and I'm noticing that other states have, you know, have the felony marker in there, and if someone were to go and not vote according to the instructions, it could actually impact. I mean, it could just be one vote that could make the difference. However, I'm a little confused, because if you send five delegates and the state only gets one vote, are you envisioning that part of the constitutional convention process would be that there would be subcommittees, committees, those kind of things, where we send five and one goes off on their own, that it would be at kind of a lower end vote before they're actually voting on an actual amendment, because the state's only getting one vote. So I'm just kind of having trouble picturing how one person might go off. But I do believe that they are representing Alaska and they need to follow the instructions. I think that's important. So I have that question as far as the levels of voting, and then I have another follow-up after that.
Representative Hughes, through the chair, it would be, in my aspect, would be the one who put the amendment forward that was out of the scope. I mean, in a discussion, everybody could discuss how they want an amendment to look like if it wasn't already told how it needed to be. And if someone all of a sudden wanted to put one forward that was completely out of the scope, convince the group and the group together, this would probably be a group decision. I mean, you couldn't really blame the person who had, you know, who ended up being the leader of the group, and put, because like you said, it's one vote, and all five people are giving that vote on that. So at this point, I don't think you could distinguish between who went off the reservation, because you couldn't judge it until the amendment was actually brought forward from that group as the one vote. You wouldn't have, say you had five people, you wouldn't have all five giving an amendment, you know, into the convention. It would be just one.
A follow-up to that question, and I have another one. So then one vote, five delegates, do they all get a felony then? if they didn't vote the way they were instructed?
Representative Hughes, through the chair, yes. Because again, there wouldn't be a distinction unless the legislature made and said this is, you know, the leader, and the others are going for support or for discussion or those purposes. But again, that might be why we might want to think about versus waiting to see how many delegates there are. It might be smarter if you're going to go with this harsh of a, you know, with going with a felony, that you might want to determine here that we only want to send one or two people, so that you don't have that issue on who's in charge, who goes off the reservation and actually gets someone to go a different direction. And you have had that where one or two delegates, you know, are sent with an alternate. And in that aspect, I think that might be a good idea.
Okay, just a follow-up comment. I would be real concerned if there were five and two totally disagreed, but the three went and voted against, and then the two who weren't in agreement got a felony. That's a problem, so I think we need to address that. Is there anything to prevent, if we were to decide just to send, you know, one or two, can we send additional observers? I noticed we have sending one of our congressional delegation as an observer. Could we send more observers, or what do you envision there would be limitations to observers?
Representative Hughes, to the chair, in most of the documents we read, for whatever reason, they were sending just one. Now, whether that is because you're already talking about a lot of people and there's no limit on how many delegates, that may have been why the one was there. I don't think there's a number on alternates, you know, and you might be able to do that versus observers on it, or you know. But I think you made a good point that limiting the number of delegates you have, especially if you want to keep what happens pretty severe, is a very good choice to go with.
And so that all of that will be decided at the point where the resolution is put together with the instructions. So we would be dealing with that at that time. But I do have another question. If you look on page 2, line 10, in the D there, it talks about that if there are any rule that's different that's decided at the convention itself, the delegates would comply with that rule, as opposed to the one that we might set out here. And so now if you look on page 3, we're setting out a rule that their vote would be voided if they voted against the instructions. Now what would happen if at the convention they would make a rule that said no votes would be voided? Or could they? Could they make that rule at the convention?
Representative Hughes, through the chair, I think they could make any rules they want at the convention, but our delegates would still be under the rules that we sent them with. And if there was a conflict between what the state sent the delegates with, it could actually make it to where maybe they can't do anything at the convention. I mean, they could not go against their instructions. The state's instructions would be first and foremost, not what they do at the convention.
Well, follow up. I'm confused because on page 2 in part D, it's kind of saying that it would follow the rules of the convention if it's not the same as what's in here. So if at the convention they decided every vote will be counted, there will be no votes voided, then if somebody goes astray, yeah, they might be subject to a felony, but their vote could still be counted. I'm just wondering if the convention rule could override what we have in here about voiding the vote. Am I making sense?
Well, Representative Hughes, through the chair, I think you are, because I think what you're saying is that if a delegate were to vote yes when they were supposed to vote no, let's just say that We were given a specific amendment. This amendment was something different that the convention brought up, and the delegate decided to say yes when the instruction would no. They would break what they were sent for. But you're right. I think that's why the Class C felony is because it could count. The vote could count as they did, and if it was that vote that got to 34, again, that's why you would want to make sure there was something harsh so that people knew that if they went down that road, what would happen. The other portion of it is that if that got passed because that happened to be the one vote that tilted the scale, those amendments still have to come back to the state where 38 would have to ratify it. Alaska would already be a no at that point because they had sent that portion of it. So I don't think you could void out their vote on the convention because you are not in control of the convention. You're in control of the delegate. And again, that's why you want to make sure the delegates are very clear on what can happen if they, as Representative Gass said, goes off the reservation.
Representative Hughes?
I'm wondering then if that were to happen. I know, you know, because we haven't had one of these, it's really hard to imagine how it all could play out. But if that circumstance were to happen, I'm wondering if we should have something that would remove Alaska from even participating, which then they might not, you know, if it's something important enough, then they wouldn't have the 30, is it 34 states or 38 states? I can't remember right now. But if a constitutional convention rule could override something that we want, I'm just wondering if we should add something that pulls Alaska out, would give us the option to pull out.
Representative Houston, you can pull out at any time. I mean, even if you go, you can do it. I think really comes, your concerns have more to do how we would choose the delegates more than does anything else. And so the delegates, the way, I mean, some will probably send legislators versus sending, you know, those out of, possibly like here, out of the judicial districts where you already kind of have that division on it. It really isn't the delegate selection that makes that difference. And also, if you make it clear cut that they can only go to the convention with these amendments versus these issues, I mean, because, you know, you break it down to an issue, it could go a lot further than if during the resolution that is formed at that time, kind of like what we've seen on some of the budget ones where it's very clear on what it would say. I think that's what it brings up more than anything else, is how clear we are will have more impact than anything else will. To just simply say in here you pull out if something like that happens, do you really want to do that because one person didn't do what you wanted and now you're not part of the discussion whatsoever, versus having that person pulled out from the convention and an alternate put in? But, you know, we can go through the what ifs, because, and I understand that the concern is real. So, but at the same time, sometimes you have to take those, to go down that road, because without it, you can't make change.
One more follow-up.
I would just say that would you really want to pull someone out? Would Alaska really want to pull out in a particular circumstance? It's possible, because if it were such a bad thing, we didn't want it, and we were the state that made it, so they hit the three-fourths. Is it three-fourths or two-thirds?
Two-thirds.
Then there might be a circumstance where we want to, but from what I'm hearing from you, it sounds like we could pull out at any time. We'd always have that option.
Representative Hughes, through the chair, absolutely, you can pull out. The resolution that was passed yesterday just says that if one's called, we want to participate. We could choose for whatever reason at the time. Maybe we love the federal government at that time. I can't imagine that, but could. And so we don't have any issues because Congress got their act together and did the right thing. So we may just say we don't want to go, and you don't have to just because your resolution just gives permission for Congress to look over and to call one, and then the decision goes to the states on whether they want to, and if they do, how they want to.
Thank you. You were talking about observers. I'm a little confused. Would you help me with my history here? The original Constitutional Convention, that was closed to the public, was it not? Would this convention be open to the public, totally transparent, or would it be held behind closed doors? And who would the observers be if we had any? Could any of us go to the convention, or would you have to be an official delegate or perhaps an official observer?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is it had to be an official observer, and that's why they're called observers. It would be someone that the state designated to do. I don't know whether it would be public or not. I would imagine that would be some of the parameters that Congress, as they called it, you know, might make that determination. Again, you're already talking about a large number of people because of the number of states that would have to be there. 34 states minimum, you know, called it, so I can't imagine less than 34. I would think all 50, because although you didn't call one, doesn't mean you can't attend. Anybody from any state can attend once it's been called. But right now, the observers are official observers, and they would be sent by the state.
Now, am I correct? The original Constitutional Convention, they met behind closed doors, did they not? And it was a huge surprise when the Constitution came outside the hall, I guess Independence Hall.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would, you could probably try to do it by closed doors, but I would be amazed, I guess, to think that nothing's going to come out once the door opens. And so, but I don't think that's a question that really is addressed by the state. That's going to be done at the convention, whether or not it's going to be public or private. I would think if someone at this time would try to make it to where no one could go, or they didn't have cameras, or some other way of allowing people to at least watch and observe, I think we're being very careful as far as what the observers here are called, because that's the setup from our understanding. But to think that somebody's going to get locked up, you know, and nobody's going to know what's going on until they come out after a week, in today's age, I just don't see that happening. And I don't think the public would put up with that, and should they?
Thank you. Representative Keller.
Thank you. I just, you know, a couple things that have come up that I'd like to speak to, and well, sponsors here, and you can, it isn't really a question, I guess, what I'm admitting, but one thing I just want to say is that there's a huge body of law that guides this. We're not used to it now because it's been nearly 100 years since we've anything's happened, but this is not first time out of the box. So I know that when I was working on this with our, with a drafter on a similar bill, Doug Gardner had done a significant amount of research, and I would just like to say that maybe, you know, I don't know what the chair's intent is, but it might be good to get his feedback on those things, because, you know, things like the observer question and whether you can pull out at any time, I suspect, and there's another source, too, by the way, and it's Nadelson. I can't remember his first name, but he's an attorney and a fellow at some think tank or whatever, and he's written a history of conventions, and I can get that, and I'm sure the sponsor can get that for you. And yes, you can pull out at any time up to the point of the ratification. Once you get to the ratification, whether it's a convention or here in the legislature, there may be guiding rules put down then that there's no more out because of the work that has gone into it. The two-thirds just gets us to a drafting convention, and that is you know, that is the one that we're guiding here in this process. The other thing I wanted to say is that penalty on page 3, you know, the one that, about the Class C felony, I think that's very appropriate, and I'd be for keeping that. But I just want to point out that the standard there is knowingly, that in criminal law, that's very, very important. That's a very high standard. In other words, that would be hard when we start talking about who's guilty and who's not, whatever, to prove knowingly is a very tall order. You also have recklessly and criminally negligent, and they're easier in a criminal court to prove. So even though it's a high penalty, it's also a very high standard to prove somebody guilty. So just wanted to put it on the record.
Any comment on that?
He's absolutely correct, sir.
Okay. Next we have Attorney Gaddis and then Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I just wanted to make the comment that I myself have been a delegate on different conventions, certainly not a constitutional convention. And so it's not really an oddity that there be alternates elected and selected, how they either get to be in the convention themselves or standing by in case somebody keels over or whatever. I think that's the discussion that will happen after this one when they draft it and all the intricacies. But I don't think that it's such an oddity that one and I have been where, as a delegate, I am tasked with certain duties that I don't stray, and other ones that I can use my mind and make the choice from a personal standpoint. So, again, I don't think either of those are oddities. It's just, I think, what the drafting and what we as a state tell our delegates or delegate what they can and can't do, and the framework and what exactly they can and can't do. And I think it really falls along the same lines as our electorate delegates have to do as well. So I can hear the conversation. I know it's always a concern, but I think at the same time, I think as we're just drafting and we're getting to that point, I think we might be worrying about some what-ifs that are not there yet. So I think there's a time and a place, and I don't think this is the time or the place, but I think it's good conversation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Isaacson. Then I'm going to go to Mr. Coons is online, and then I may save anybody from legal who's listened to this whole thing and make some comments. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you. And I want to echo what Representative Gaddis was saying. This is more of a comment than a question because of the questions that Representative Hughes brought forward. Since it becomes intent language when somebody is looking at this, wanted to make sure that we did clarify that within this bill, and the sponsor, correct me if I'm wrong, that the questions that you were dealing with were more in the instructions that a future legislature by joint resolution is going to determine, and especially when it gets down to how to deal with changes made at the convention, I suppose. That's, in one aspect, this would look contradictory, the portions on page 2 versus page 3, but at the other time, it's instructing the future legislature by joint resolution how to accommodate that type of a scenario. And like Rep. Gaddis was saying, I've been a delegate to conventions, including 2004 National Republican Convention, and at that time, it wasn't as aggressive as I imagined this. We didn't break out into subcommittees and so forth. But we had multiple delegates, and we selected the person who would cast the vote for the state. And that person then, I imagine, if they went against the wishes of the group, would probably be lynched, determining on how many were there. But that person, I suppose, would shoulder the most liability and the criminal complaint. But that's something I suppose would be determined by joint resolution later. Going back to history, the Treaty of Paris, remember Ben Franklin and John Adams went there, and they had to communicate back to the states over great distance because their communication went by boat. But there were times when the two would be sitting around there, you know, just enjoying French society until somebody like John Jay or someone came over and gave them clarification to their instructions. So I anticipate, as Rep. Keller was saying, that there is this body of legal precedent that we need to investigate and require perhaps, and so by intent I'm saying let's do it, I'm agreeing. Let's make sure that this is incorporated into the discussion of a future legislature when they make this joint resolution. Observers, by the way, just what the chair asked. Thanks. Well, one of the Rep. Lins. Even Arctic Council has observers, and usually an observer in this statute or this bill has an observer being someone who cannot sit the seat. Like a U.S. Congressperson, they can observe. Arctic Council has observers as non-voters and not geographically located in the Arctic. So you get countries like China and Portugal and others who are wanting to be there, part of the discussion, but they cannot cast the vote. And so I imagine that the Congress people, as if we choose to have them as observers, may be there as a reference to those who are the delegates to give them professional advice as to what might happen when it went to Congress or something. I mean, there's a purpose and a place for them, I imagine. And so that future joint resolution will also, I'm sure, when they choose delegates and observers, will refine the purpose of an observer and an alternate and so forth. And if I'm mistaken, please correct me.
Representative, through the chair, that the observer could actually even be a legislator. It could also be designated so that if something comes up, as Representative Hughes was saying, at the convention at the time, there could be that person that they could go to and say, okay, now this happened. You know, and again, what we're trying to do in this bill, it is very general, and we're doing that on purpose. And that is because we don't know what's going to get brought up, and we don't want to tie the hands any more than we have to of future legislatures so that they can, at the time, say, this is what's going on, this is what we hear from our constituents, and they can address the things that they need to. If we limit the scope so much, you know, not knowing what the future holds, you know, we may miss out on a discussion that could have the biggest impact for Alaska. So I know that this is very general, but I think it has the parameters that most of us want to see to make sure that our delegates are chosen in a way to which they will follow through with what you would hope that, that anybody going would do.
Thank you. Representative Hughes?
Yes, I'm back to Representative Keller's comment regarding the felony and the word knowingly and how that's a pretty high standard. And I would just want to point out that in the person would be taking the oath, and in the oath, they are saying that they're going to follow the instructions and authorization. So I think that probably would fit the test for the knowingly. And if I'm wrong, you know, if legal has a different opinion of that, I would like to know. And I just wanted to point that out.
Any response, Representative Keller?
No, I think that's true. The knowingly is a standard of proof if they're guilty. This would set the standard that they'd have to prove that they violated, you know, in order to be guilty of the felony. It'd be very clear. Proving the knowingly might not be as easy. That's why it's a high standard, you know, that you knew, you know, that you were violating the state intent, you know.
May I respond,
yes.
Mr. Chair? They've taken the oath, and they've said they're going to follow the instructions. So then if they violate it, then I would assume that they knew they violated because they swore to uphold, you know, to follow the instructions. So it's a high standard, but I think it would be clearly it shown to be that they knew what they were doing.
Representative Wilson?
Representative Hughes, to the chair, you have to take the oath to even be charged with a felony. So let's say we sent five delegates in, and we wanted to be clear, and only one got to cast a vote at the end of the day. That may be the one that takes the oath, and then it makes it clear that that's the person who is in charge, and this can happen too, and also would be the one on record as the person who is casting that vote. If they send the observer, the others who do not take the oath, they could not be charged with a felony, because that's really what it's attached to, is breaking the oath.
To that point, Mr. Chair.
To that point?
Actually, I know it's your bill, so I don't want to correct you, but I just want to make sure that the intent is specified. On page 2, line 21, section B, and it says each delegate and alternate delegate, a delegate appointed under this section, NC, shall be sworn as follows. So,
and as Representative Isaac said, they would all be guilty.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Just want to make sure that. Yeah,
no, you're absolutely correct.
Right. Okay, let's go online. Mike Coons, are you online?
Yeah, this is Mike Coons, and I'm calling as one of two directors for Alaska for Citizens Initiative.
Would you tell us what is the Citizens Initiative?
Citizens Initiative is a grassroots organization that is advocating the proper, safe, and proper and safe use of Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution, in a nutshell.
Okay, go ahead and give your testimony, please.
Okay, first of all, state legislators must not advocate their Article 5 sovereignty to the delegates at the convention. So the deliberative body, and I think it's been stated, it's been talked about here, is the state legislature. It is not the delegates. And House Bill 310 does one thing, and that is that it's basically, since this is going to, and this has become statute, especially with the felony aspect of it, then that has to be signed by the governor. What Citizens Initiative, and I think Representative Isaacson has kind of alluded to, is that once the call has been, and correct me if I'm wrong, but do we do a delegate resolution that is more specific to how the convention is run, and we do that just prior to going to the convention, or is that, can that be done in a near future aspect? I think that's a key question. That's one question.
Do you want that to be You want that question to be answered now, or do you want to wait till the end?
I would be fine now.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chair, the state of Alaska won't determine how the convention, what is done at the convention. Congress calls it once there's 34 states that have done it. What we do is we put the parameters around our delegates only, not any other state.
Okay. In answer to that, we have got, and I've sent to Representative Wilson as well as others on the committee, Citizens Initiative recommended or proposed delegate resolution. And this kind of goes, the very first part of this kind of goes to Representative Hughes' comment about one state, one vote. If you look at Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution, there is nothing in there that says anything about that at all. It's kind of a, it's just out there. But in our resolution, the very first whereas is that Article 5, Section 4 of the Constitution of the United States guarantees each state a Republican form of government that gives each state equal standing when calling for a federal amendment convention. Article 5 of the Constitution of the United States reserves to the state legislatures the right to call for a federal convention for the purpose of proposing amendments to the United States Constitution when Congress, the court, and our executive branch refuse to address an egregious wrong suffered by the people. That puts it where it, that puts it one state, one vote. Right now, there really isn't anything that does this as far as the convention. As to Representative Wilson's comment, if the state of Alaska and 25 or 26 or 30 other states all do the similar type of resolution, where it not only binds the delegates as 310 does, but also states out how the committees are done, there's a whole series of things, then there's a majority of the states that have all got the same resolution, and when they go to that convention, then there is a sure and safe aspect, because that means the vast majority of the states that go into that convention have all said this is the way this convention is going to be run. Congress has no say in that. Congress only does is when we've made the 34 calls to Congress to bring up the convention, then Congress says, okay, the date and time. After that, Congress is completely out of the scope on that. And as to the article, the felony aspect of this, and I totally agree with Representative Keller on this, that this is basically knowingly violating that oath. And a kind of an example of that would be if a delegate were to decide to, let's say you had a convention going and New York sends 50 people and California sends another 50 and you got a bunch of people there and they're wanting to change this thing and add another amendment, like let's say, worst case scenario, repealed our the Second Amendment. When that person steps out that side of that realm, that's where the axe falls, and that's where they get recalled, and that's where they could be charged with a Class C felony and taken to court and eventually found guilty. So there's a lot to this, and we have, and like I said, I've sent this out to the members and to Representative Wilson, the delegate resolution that will, if were to be adopted, would be a safe convention for all states. But again, going back to Representative Isaacson's question or comment was that I kind of got this idea that we still have the ability to do this more general delegate resolution. Last question, the last thing that Representative Wilson said, and I really picked up on it really quick, because I know that I read her HJR 22 that just passed. That was a call for a convention of states for topics, I guess POS is now calling them topics. But she also stated, just a few minutes ago, that these would be amendments that the states would be sending down to the delegates, with the delegates to the convention, not issues. So how does that change, you know, how does that work with what we've already passed as far as the call for topics and or slash issues?
Reverend Wilson?
Well, Mr. Chair, what I said was we have two ways of doing it. We can say what topics that we want our delegates to do, or if we want to be more specific on those three topics, we could have amendments already written that we send our delegates down with to support. That doesn't change what HJR 22, because those amendments would still have to match those topics. They could not go outside of those topics. It just depends upon the legislature at the time how specific they want to get.
Mr. Coons?
Okay. Yeah, and I would advocate for the amendment, because the beauty of that is if the state of Alaska were to say, we're sending down with our delegates with their instructions and with a delegate resolution similar to what we have, with these clear instructions, with these clearly written amendments, then the other states can begin doing the same thing, and those other amendments coming in, and they're very extremely similar, then it's just a matter of the delegates working out the differences, coming back to the state of Alaska, the state of Alaska still being the sovereign on this, still being the deliberative body on this, and saying, yes, we like this, or no, we don't, or we want to make these changes, and it's working back and forth. And now you come out of that convention with a single or multiple amendments that are all, that everybody's on the same sheet of music on, that that once you get into that convention, my understanding is all you really need is 51% to pass it through to send out for ratification. So once that's done, then you have a clear, defined scope and a clear, defined state scope, where that, and then it comes out to states, and 38 states say yay or nay.
Representative Wilson?
I just want to make sure it's clear that two-thirds of the states have to pass the amendment, and then three-fourths of the states have to ratify it. So it's higher than a 51%. But I understand, Mr. Coons, and I appreciate his testimony today. But if it would be okay with you, Mr. Chair, what I would, there's been a lot of great discussion here today, and if it would be okay with you, I would like to take the opportunity to go around to each one of the members and do a couple of the tweaks that you've discussed today, and bring back a CS with those changes in there, because I think there's been some great discussion, and for them to be able to mull over whether or not, as we talked about, we might not want to limit the number of delegates because we don't know what's going to look like or what the amendments will be doing. But I think I would like to discuss with them on the compensation portion of it. I'd also like to check with Representative Gaddis's question on what do we do right now in the Electoral College, what happens if they don't, just so we have. I think that's a great measurement, because that's another very serious proposal on that, and be able to bring it back to you next week with those changes in there so that everybody's comfortable. Because this is the only, at this point, the only hearing that this bill has, so I want to make sure that everybody has had their chance to make sure it's what they wanted to look at, especially with the extensive discussion we had yesterday.
I'm comfortable with it. I believe we have, before we do that, I believe we have somebody from Let's Legal on the line for questions. I thought somebody was.
No. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yes, this is Mike. The only other thing that I would like to add to what Representative Wilson said is I would at least like to, since it is a moot point, it is not a point that is brought up specifically in Article 5, is to have in this delegate resolution the fact that the aspect of Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, so it's clearly stated that it is a one-vote, one-state, one-vote convention, so that there is no way that when it gets down to it, the delegates or the convention can turn around and say, well, it's one delegate per vote for it. That way we would have, because we could end up losing to New York or California or the bigger states. That would be the only thing I would like to ensure it gets added to this resolution. Thank you.
Would you please identify yourself for our people over here.
Yeah, this is Mike Jones again from Citizens, Director of Citizens Initiatives.
I thought you were from the legal department here. Nobody from Ledge Legal? Okay, fine. I believe we're going to hold this bill upon the recommendation of the sponsor, but before we take that step, is there any other comments, closing comments for this session from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gaddis.
I guess I would like to say that I think this is a perfect next step to our conversation and the resolution that was passed yesterday, and I think we're moving into the right direction when we want to say it's time to pull back the federal government and they need to listen to the state. So I appreciate the sponsor bringing this forward and working with us to get it right, because I think we want to do it right from the first time out. So thank you.
As we should, every bill we hear here. Would you like to make any closing comments before we adjourn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the discussion, because I do really think that this is the next step to make sure that everyone realizes that, yes, the resolution, you know, ties at one thing. As far as saying that in this particular one vote, one state, again, we need to make sure we don't tie our hands in a way that may not be advantageous to us. But I think, you know, what I've heard today is we want to, you know, check on the compensation, what the best way, whether to take it completely out or to add the verbiage, as Representative Isaacson said, and we will talk to legal first, and we'll come around with whatever their discussion is, and again, to be able to try to measure it upon some other type of activity that we already do, to be consistent with it. I just want, I guess, caution the committee to make sure we don't get so specific that we end up, you know, down the road tying hands of our future legislators who may be sitting there, or you may as well, depending upon, hopefully it won't take that long for this to come through, but so that we can take every bit of advantage of this. And again, you know, hopefully we won't have to take advantage, because the federal government will be hearing us and seeing that there's a movement, and they always have that opportunity to do things in a different manner. So this is just one way of doing things, but it is still in their hands. So I appreciate the time that the committee has, and I will make appointments with each one of you and make sure that we have that addressed in the CS and get it back to you next week.
Do you have an estimate of how long it might take before we're ready to hear this bill again?
I work fast, Mr. Chair. I could probably have it to you Tuesday if you'd like.
Again, please?
Yes. I can have it to you on Tuesday if that works for you. We can make sure that we talk to people, whatever is your choice.
Fine. Just keep us advised. And I'm going to close public testimony now. We may open it again next week and hear from you. Representative Hughes.
I just want to check with you, Chair, if other things come to mind that we haven't been yet on the table that we discuss with the sponsor, that is fine with you, because our wheels are already turning. So
well, absolutely.
Along this.
Welcome anytime. If we want to correspond, you know, with our communicate rather with our sponsor and between ourselves, when we come back to the next meeting, iron out some of the difficulty, and perhaps if we come to some kind of a conclusion, we can move the bill the next time we meet, because time is getting short, and if we get it out of the House, it would have to go to the other body. Okay. Any other closing comments? Thank you very much for bringing the bill forward. We don't have a schedule yet for next week. Perhaps we can hear this bell again at that time. Any closing comments from anybody in the committee about any other subject? If not, I'd like to thank you for coming this morning. We are adjourned.